to the yeshiva. How was your test? Okay, it's good to be back, everybody. The beginning of our winter zman. We have amazing learning in all of the shurim, including this weekly chug. Just to remind you, in Elul we spoke about holiday-related topics, and over the course of the year, when that's relevant, Hanukkah, Purim, these kind of things, we will do some holiday topics. But for the most part, the consistent default part of the chug is to pick a different halachic topic each week, usually connected to the parsha. Now, given that it's Tuesday, I reserve the right to either look forward. If I don't find a good topic that way, I may cheat and look backwards. But usually, the idea would be to give the to do a topic on the coming week's parsha. So the coming week's parsha is Noach, so I thought we would do a Noach topic. Now, obviously, there are certain parshiot in the Torah, especially as we get into Shmos and Vayikra and Bamidbar, Dvarim, etc. There are certain parshiot in which there are actual mitzvos obligated in the parshiot, psukim themselves, mitzvos tzivuyim. In Bereishis, you have far less of that. Obviously, Bereishis is much more narrative and much less legal or mitzvos. But nevertheless, there are certain mitzvos which come up in Sefer Bereishis. And that's just where you need the absolute creativity of yours truly to find cleverly topics even in otherwise unrelated stories and events. So in that vein, for Parshas Noach, I thought of the following. After the flood, we are told that Noach got himself drunk. Again, hard to judge considering the traumatic event that he had just survived, but it's clearly not a good thing. The Torah does not describe this as a flattering moment for Noach. But then the Torah tells us after he was drunk and uncovered and undressed, Vayikach Shem V'yefes Es HaSimla V'yasimu Al Shechem Shnehem. And they both covered up their father, who was embarrassingly drunk and unclothed. However, Rashi quotes that even though the Torah does tell us that two people did it, the Torah does not say V'yikhu in plural Shem V'yefes. And therefore, it can't contradict the simple reading of the text. The simple reading is that they both did it. But the fact that it's in singular, Rashi quotes from Chazal, is a reference to the fact that primarily shame did it. Right? As you all know, in your social circles and in every area of life you've been in, right, there's sometimes leaders and followers. Just because two people do something does not mean they did it equally. Say Chazal, the main person who did it was shame. And therefore, the Jewish people, his descendants, are rewarded with a special mitzvah of tzitzis. The mitzvah daraisa that goes on clothing. They clothed or covered their father. So we have the special mitzvah of tzitzis. The Torah does say that Yefes got a zechus for his descendants, but that's not our topic. Anyway, with that allusion snuck into Rashi al Parsha, I want to discuss tzitzis. One question in a second. Now, tzitzis is a huge topic. Could speak about 1,000 things relating to tzitzis. But I wanted to speak about the following. Basically, two issues. One short and one the bulk of this year. The first one is, are we truly obligated to wear tzitzis? Or is it just a nice mitzvah? And then the second thing, which I really want to get to, because that one you probably have heard over the years, although we will review it. But the second thing I wanted to discuss more in depth is, which material garments, clothing, constitute the true obligation or the true fulfillment of the mitzvah. And this will have two practical ramifications for you and I, Adi Yom Hazeh. And that is, you may be familiar with the fact that there are typically three types of garments that you will see people wearing, right? Sometimes you have the woolen racing stripe. Tzitzis, the racing stripe is just a flare, but the main thing is that those are the wool heavy tzitzis. You also have typically, commonly, cotton tzitzis. Truth in advertising, that's what I'm wearing. But then you also have something that's common, I don't know if it's the last 15, 20, 30 years, I don't know exactly how long it goes back. Of course, you have the mesh or the various tzitzis from synthetic garments. Okay, so I want to discuss all three of those things. So that's going to be the main halachic thrust of the shir. And obviously, this is very, very important because if we're wearing tzitzis every day, we need to know if we're doing the mitzvah, what type of material we should do. Okay, just a reminder, by the way, also on the question, think again, we're going to balance covering ground and letting people get a momentum. But of course, obviously, I want to give people a chance to ask questions. So since we haven't really said anything yet, Just very, very quickly, unless it's absolutely necessary, just a few quick questions, and then we're going to get right into the sugya. Your hand up was first. Yes? I wanted to say, is tzitzis really an obligation or not, or is it just some nice thing to do? Okay, that's, and you've probably heard that over the years, especially from a high school rabbi or maybe a father or something, or a shura, but we will review that in a moment, but then we'll ease into the main topic, which is, again, what material garments and where does that come from? Yes?
I was just going to ask, are we going to also talk about techeles?
No. I said what we're going to discuss. So this is an important, by the way, there's an important principle in halachic analysis and logic. Sometimes in halacha, they say, michlal hain shomei alav. From what a person did say, hain is the positive, you can infer the negative. Right? So that's that. So that doesn't always work, but in this case it did. Yes?
But doesn't the Mishnah often say, here's all the cases and only let a few of them?
Yes. That's why you can't always do it. The Gemara sometimes will ask that, though. The Gemara will say, well, how about this list? What about this and this? And sometimes the Gemara gives a real answer, and sometimes the Gemara will say, oh, actually, no, it didn't mean to be an exhaustive list. Anyway, okay. No, but I'm not a Mishnah anyway. Okay, last question.
What about undershirt tzitzis?
I'm not going to discuss those, but I will tell you in advance that if they're the right material, which we haven't discussed yet, then the fact that they're your undershirt is totally fine, as far as I'm concerned. We call those in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, the gufanit tzitzis. And with younger kids, they're definitely convenient, especially for moms and dads and all that stuff. So it's harder for kids to wear undershirts and tzitzis. But anyway, okay, now let's talk real Torah. Okay, so is it really a chiyuv or not? So despite my clever discovery of the mitzvah of tzitzis in Parshas Noach, that's clearly not where it belongs. Obviously, the psukim that discuss the tzitzis, psukim that are famous to you, are in Bamidbar and Perek Tezvav. And there we are told that what is the purpose of tzitzis? V'yahaya l'achem l'tzitzis u'ri'isem oso uzachartem es kol mitzvos Hashem va'asisem osam v'osasur achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem v'shiratem v'zonim achreihem. That's a mouthful, but it's pretty straightforward and it's pretty powerful. What is the purpose of tzitzis? We don't say that about just every mitzvah. That every mitzvah gets the Torah itself giving you the tam and giving you the reason in such a lofty and meaningful way. Apparently the tzitzis are there to do what? Through them to remember all the other mitzvos. It's an instrument to remembering the 612 other mitzvos. Of course, right away, the pasuk itself bridges mind and action. Not only remember them, but therefore asisem, then do them. It's not just a trip down memory lane, right? It's not nostalgia. And do them. And then the Torah adds something really fascinating, that somehow re'isem oso, that by seeing them, lo sosuru, that somehow will also prevent you from transgressing, as if you might have otherwise done a sin, and the tzitzis will remind you not to. And in fact, there are various agaritot, mamari chazal, with stories, sometimes really out-of-the-box kind of stories, where people might have sinned, and somehow the tzitzis kind of held them back, that last reminder, that guilt. And again, as far as I'm sure you've known over the years, you know, there's a whole discussion about how you, the knots and the strings, and it comes up to a gematria of 613, all part of this theme, again, that comes really in the Torah itself, about the purpose to remember. That's one, that's a pasuk. But there's also two gemaras that speak about this elevated and higher purpose of the mitzvah of tzitzis. The sugyas of tzitzis, interestingly enough, are primarily in Masechta Menachos. There is no Masechta tzitzis in the Talmud Bavli, but in Masechta Menachos on Daf Mem Gimel, so first of all, the Torah tells us, the Gemara tells us as a reward, by wearing tzitzis, you will be zocha, you will merit to see the Shechina. Now, I'm not exactly sure what that means. I don't know, not necessarily sure it means literally, unless it means that somehow in the sunset you will be sensitive to the divine or something else. But if it means somebody actually apprehending the Shechina in kind of a Nevuah-like thing, so then I have not yet been Zocha, so maybe it's more of a figurative thing, but it's certainly, again, it's certainly an illustration of the importance that Chazal give to that mitzvah. And secondly, the Gemara also says on that Mem Aleph, this is a very oft-quoted statement of Chazal, that by wearing tzitzis, you will be protected even be'idchan ritcha, even at a time where somehow Hashem is angry. In other words, if the Jewish people has done something to incur God's wrath, so we know, this is again not our topic, I will not digress, so don't ask me about this, but we have such a concept in the incredibly complicated and mysterious idea of God's punishment and reward, Schar v'Onesh, which you don't always understand, incredibly complicated philosophical topic. We have a notion going back at least as early maybe as Mitzrayim, maybe even to Sodom, of the idea that sometimes if an area or a group of people gets punished, somehow that will encompass even the individuals within that group or that location who may not deserve it. So Says the Gemara, if the Jewish people has really upset Hashem, and this is an Idan Ritcha, it's a time of Hashem's anger, everyone, lots of people might get caught up in that. So the Gemara there says, at that type of moment, Dafka, of all things, the Mitzvah of Tzitzis, serves as some kind of a protection or insulation against God's anger. They have a Pasuk and two Gemaras that speak about, in a very lofty way, the value added, not just the Mitzvah, but the value added of the Mitzvah of Tzitzis. What we yet haven't seen in any of these discussions is when or if is the Mitzvah actually an obligatory thing that I absolutely must do. So here, again, this is something that you probably are familiar with, but the post-game all pretty much note that the answer is yes and no. Namely, that is to say, sometimes Tzitzis are an absolute obligation. When is that? If you're wearing a garment of Arba Kanfos. If you're wearing a four-cornered garment, which at various points in history was the norm of their clothing. Not that they had a special thing with tzitzis, but in that normal four-cornered garment, you had to put on tzitzis, what you and I call tzitzis, the fringes on those corners. But that is only if you're wearing it. What if a person wasn't wearing a four-cornered garment? So it's clear that there is, strictly speaking, is no obligation. So, back up. Is there a mitzvah to put on a four-cornered garment? The answer is, strictly speaking, there is no obligation. However, already the Aruch HaShulchan in Siman Ches, in the beginning of Orach Chaim, and many contemporary Svarim and Poskim all note that it, in fact, is a universal custom of Yarei Shamayim, as the Aruch HaShulchan puts it, if I remember correctly, of God-fearing people to become obligated, to put on a four-corner garment so that they can then fulfill the mitzvah. Again, that is what you and I are familiar with, this idea of a unique garment which we're putting on just for the opportunity to wear to do the mitzvah, not something that we'd otherwise wear. And in fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva, he takes this to its logical conclusion, and he says that on some level, in fact, nowadays, there is an obligation, mitam minhag. In other words, the true d'araisa obligation only would kick in if you were wearing a four-corner garment. But what about this idea of putting on what you and I call tzitzis, or what in halachic literature we call talis katan? That's the thing that goes under your shirt. Although actually, if you follow the Shulchan Aruch, or if you're a chassid who follows the Shulchan Aruch, you put it on over your shirt. Again, there's a lot of topics of tzitzis. That's not one we're discussing now, but most of us, well, everyone in the room I should say, but most people you and I know, really outside of the Hasidic world, most Jews put their tzitzis, their talis katan, on under their shirt. So even though, strictly speaking, there wouldn't have been an obligation to do that, because already for centuries, I mean many centuries, we're talking about going back to the time of the Gemara, this has become a custom to do throughout history. Therefore, it says Rav Moshe, not only is it the custom of God-fearing people, but it really has the chumrah, so to speak, of a minhag. Again, it's interesting, maybe we'll do it later in the year. It's a separate meta topic. What is the status of minhagim? Right. And I mean like the minhagim that like the whole Jewish people do, not just something. So that's a complicated question, but in simple, short terms, you got to do it. It's not the same thing as you got to do it because the Torah said so, but you do got to do it. So, again, on some level, yes, it's true. If someone were to say to me, Rabbi, it's tzitzis or tefillin, I don't appreciate ultimatums. But let's say they were just asking me hypothetically. So the answer is, yeah, there's no comparison. Right? Tefillin is a strict obligation you don't rise every day. Tzitzis, not. On the other hand, again, it's an opportunity to get a mitzvah every day. Number one. Number two is, it's the minhag of Yarei Shamayim. And number three is just the minhag of all good people. Number four, I would just say on a, not a halachic level, just on a Revi to Talmud, like let's be real with each other kind of thing. You have to just ask yourself. Again, this is not targeted at you. This is a tzibur that's wearing tzitzis. But just hypothetically, or for friends of yours or others that you know who sometimes struggle with this, and in many cultures and many communities, it is an issue with a lot of teens and sometimes, frankly, adults. But let's be honest, especially for teens, but yeah, maybe sometimes for adults too. Tzitzis is one of those things that really does make a statement about a person. And what kind of statement are you making when you don't wear tzitzis? I don't mean like when you're playing basketball. Again, not our topic. But I mean in general. You're not a tzitzis, right? In today's day and age, that is a statement, and I think we all probably know that, right? Wearing tzitzis, conversely, also makes a statement. So that's not in the Gemara per se, but I think it's something that, if we're going to be real, we should just kind of throw out there. But again, bottom line, before we get to the main thrust of the shiur, which is going to be the material, the strict obligation was with the four garments, four corners. Already the Gemara talks about going out of our way to put on a garment with four corners so that we have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. There's special reward associated with the mitzvah and special divine protection. And Moshe Feinstein even suggests that maybe there is a formal minhag, which in that sense requires us. Yes, a few questions.
Okay, so if you have a pair of tzitzis and you're not sure if it's kosher, is it better to risk them? Is it better to wear them and then either wear a four-corner garment and not be wearing proper tzitzis versus wearing kosher tzitzis or just not wearing tzitzis at all?
No, if there's really a doubt whether you have kosher fringes, tzitzis, then better not to wear it. Because if you're wearing it, that's a four-corner garment.
You're not even going to wear it. You're just not getting a mitzvah.
No, if you put on a four-corner garment without tzitzis, that is an aveira.
You have an obligation, but...
No.
It's supposed to say that you're just not fulfilling, isn't it?
If you don't put on the four-cornered. If you do... No. If you do put on a four-cornered garment, there's a chiyuv de araisa to put on tzitzis. It's just... There's no chiyuv to put on the four-cornered garment. But if you're wearing it, of course you have to have tzitzis on it. So if you're not sure your tzitzis are kosher, better not to wear it, for sure.
But you don't get an avera.
Yes!
So like you get an avera for not wearing tefillin?
Yes!
It says that you're not forgetting the message.
Yes, that's an Aveira. I mean, I don't want to fight, get confused over words, but yes, that's a chiyuv. You get punished for not putting on tefillin. It's not just a, ooh, I didn't get points. Yes, 100%. Okay, that's a mitzvah chiyuvah. Yes, just one or two questions so we can move on. You were first, yes.
Two points. But firstly, could you relate the thing of wearing tzitzis as a minhag to wearing kippah?
Yes, I don't want to just because I don't know the answer. I don't want to weigh them which one is more or less. But yes, I would say similarly, the two things I just said are both true. You have to wear a yarmulke nowadays.
Yeah.
We'll figure out how to fill in the details in the footnotes of where that comes from. But yes, because that and number two is ain statement gadol mizeh.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, agreed. Yes.
And
good comparison in that sense.
If you were to wear a suit jacket. And you have sometimes you've got
Yes, those are shaila. Again, beyond the scope of today's shiur. I mean, again, I have in this bag here one book which is a few hundred pages in Hebrew just on tzitzis. And there's probably other books like that. So it's a huge topic. We're not going to get everything into tzitzis. But yes, what counts as four-cornered is a question.
Yeah.
Yes, fair enough. Yes.
Where did the location of the corners have to be? Like here, I've got corners here.
No, those are on the sides here. There's the two in the front, two in the back. Let's make a corner. Yeah, on top.
Kippah, I thought there's
not a kippah.
No, but there's some Sephardi Jews with the minhag to only wear it in the house, right?
No kippah question. You have a tzitzis question?
No.
Okay, last question, then we'll move on.
For women at
60. Good question. Good question. You're not going to suck me into the controversial part of the discussion. You will not. But the non-controversial part is that women are potter. And a woman can wear a four-corner garment without any fringes on it, and she didn't do anything wrong, unlike a man, who that would be an Aveira. What if, that's Xerasa Kasuf, it's also Mitzvah Shaman Grama. Yes, because tzitzis are considered something called Beged Yom. Again, we could have a semester just on tzitzis. There's so many interesting and important topics. But Uri'isem Oso, the pasuk we mentioned before, Uri'isem Oso. So what exactly that means? Does that mean day versus night? Or does it have to do with the garments? The Gemara is a very famous machlokes. Does that mean ksus yom, day wear, versus ksus laila, pajamas? Or does it mean day versus night? But either way, no one argues, I think. But it's certainly, paskin and shulchan aruch, women are pater. Of course, the controversial part is what if a woman wants to wear tzitzis? Not going there. At all. Was I clear about that? Are you unsure of my desire whether or not to
where
speak
are you
about
going?
That? Not there. Okay, so now, What material? Again, I want to divide this up into two sections, more or less. One is going to be the wool versus cotton kind of discussion, other natural materials. And then, lastly, very importantly, perhaps even relevant to people in the room at the moment, what about the mesh and the synthetic tzitzis? Okay, so let's start with the natural materials, wool versus. So the Torah tells us in Bamidbar, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Lamed Ches, that the tzitzis must be attached al kanfei bigdehem, onto the corners, as we've been alluding to. But it's not just the corners, on bigdehem. The Torah uses that term, beged. So the Gemara in Masechta Menachos, on the Lamed Tes, has a big machlokes, what constitutes a beged. Halachically, it's like a formal halachic discussion, what is a beged? One opinion says only wool or linen. Only wool or linen. The Gemara has a drusha for that. I don't want to get into the details of the drusha now. But that opinion says there's a drusha, only wool or linen. And the Yesh Omrim, the other opinion, I think it's Rava if I remember correctly, says no, all other natural materials are also a beged. Why wool or linen? There's other natural things, for example, cotton being the most likely candidate, that would also be considered a beged. Now when I say all, I have to have a caveat, which is that there is a Gemara, one daf later, daf mem, that says everyone agrees, both of these opinions agree that even if it's all, it does not include leather. We'll get the leather discussion, like why not? If you hold only wool and linen, the Seder, it's only wool and linen. But one of the other opinions says it's all natural things, so what about leather? So what's wrong with leather is going to be relevant, we'll get to in a little bit, because that's going to be relevant, interestingly enough, to synthetic. But for now, wool versus cotton, let's leave it to make it simple. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. You can't get more basic than that. It's actually a machlokas going back to the Gemara. The first opinion says it has to be wool. The second opinion says it could be any other natural material other than, as we see, when it comes to leather. So how do we paskin? This is a major, major machlokas rishonim. The Rambam and the Rif both paskin only wool and linen. I don't know if you call that a chumra or a kula, I don't know how you want to call that, but it doesn't really matter. The one thing is to get the point straight. They paskin, you're only chayv midaraisa and tzitzis. The garment is wool, parentheses, or linen, although that's the Rif and the Rambam. Now I want to pause here for a minute. If you remember, we started in Elul that we try, time permitting, one or two times during each year to have a little bit of a mini bio of two of the of our sources, so we get a sense of the halachic process. So I want to stop here for a second and tell you a moment about the Rif. Right? I hope you're somewhat familiar with the Rif, perhaps from Gemara. He's the one in the back of the Gemara that looks like the Gemara. It could be all sorts of confusing. So who was the Rif? So first of all, his name, Rif, the Reish Yud-Heh-Sofit, is the Rav Yitzchak Alfasi. He was born in the beginning of the 11th century, and he lived Kanai Nahara, a long life. He lived 90 years to the beginning of the 12th century. Most of his life, he lived in a city in Morocco called Fez. That's where Alfasi comes from Fez. If I'm not mistaken, I think for the end of his life, he had to flee. But most of his life, he lived there. That's where the name comes from. He wrote other things, but he's most famous for that thing that we have in the back of the Gemara. You and I call it the Rif. The technical name is the Sefer Halachos, written by the Rif. He lives in Morocco, in the city of Fez. He wrote it over many, many years. At some point, I don't know if it was the first 10 years or some point in the middle, but some legend is, I think it was even the first 10 years, he stayed holed up in his father-in-law's attic, like writing. And I think at some point after that he moved, and that's I think when he moved to another community, and they like spent money just to support him so he could continue writing. He was a very famous rabbi, and this was a monumental project that the community took pride in. And in fact, they supported him so he could do this project. Two last things about him, and then we'll move on. Number one is he had some famous talmidim. It's important to note, like the tree. You know, like Lahavdil, if you follow sports, they talk about a coaching tree, the coach and whose assistants were, and then we're in politics and who was in certain so administration and so there's a halachic tree too. Certain gedolim also had a lot of gedolim as talmidim. So the Rif was one of those. Anyone know who maybe the most famous talmid of the Rif was? You know this? Who was the most famous talmid of the Rif? I mean, that's not fair. I'm calling him the most famous. But certainly one, if not the most famous, the Rimi Gash. Now, who was the Rimi Gash? Well, if you learn Baba Basra or Shavuos, you might have heard of him. But why is the Rimi Gash important? Because the Rimi Gash had a very famous Talmud named Maimon. Who was Maimon? The father of the Rambam. So that's not a surprise that the Rambam was so influenced by the Rif, because his father was the Talmud of the Talmud Mubhok of the Rif. So that's kind of a Mesorah. The last point, very important, this is why does the Rif matter to you, so it's beyond history. It's because when the Shulchan Aruch set up to do his thing, Yosef Karo, he tells us openly, how does he decide halacha? He says there are three pillars of psak. He's writing 500 years ago, but he's looking back to 1,000 years ago. He says three pillars of psak: the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. So one of the three pillars, that ain't bad. And when you have the Rambam, who's going to be very large influenced by you as the other one, it ain't a surprise that more often than not, the Shulchan Aruch is paskening like the Rif / the Rambam. So he became very, very influential, you know, on most pages of most paragraphs of the Shulchan Aruch, whether you realize it or not, you're seeing very, very often something that originally could be stated back to the Rif. Adkan storytelling, as important as history is. But let's just go back now to the main point, though. So the Rif said, along with the Rambam, again, we get the connection now, that he has to be wool or linen. That's the only thing that's obligated mid oraisa. The Rambam added, I don't remember, I don't think this is in the Rif. I don't think he disagrees. I don't remember if he says it, though. But the Rambam says, and this is how it's assumed by those who follow, that when we say it's only wool or linen, what we mean is on a daraisa level. But even they agree that any garment, let's say cotton, is obligated rabbinically, read Rabbanah. But if you want to know what does the Torah say is the mitzvah, fulfill the mitzvah daraisa of, says this. So they say that is wool or linen. Okay, big guns. We got the Rif and the Rambam and others. However, not everyone agrees. Tosfos, there in Menachos, quotes from Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, right? We've moved to like France, right? It's a whole more Ashkenazic Rishonim, and they pass like the other opinion, that even things like cotton, like Tzemer Geffen, are also obligated Mida Oraisa. It's not limited to wool or linen, but even other natural materials such as cotton are obligated Mida Oraisa. Okay, so this is a major, major machlokas. So we had a machlokas in the Gemara, can't get more basic than that. That's followed up by a machlokas in the Rishonim. And of course, now the million-dollar question is, how do we paskin? Before I tell you how you paskin, any important questions? Yes?
How do you spell Rif?
Rei Shud Pei Sofi.
So, if according to Rambam, you can only use wool or linen, could you fulfill your mitzvah through what garment made of the shotness?
So that is where the whole discussion comes from. That relates to the whole Tcheles question. The Gemara tells us explicitly that with Tcheles you can violate shotness. Avasei docholos asei. Without Tcheles, for sure not.
Why not?
Beyond the scope of the shir, okay? Yes.
Why do we assume that you're still obligated to your Rabbanan for everything?
I'm not saying it would be obvious. I'm saying that that's what they say.
They just
don't get that. I don't remember. Honestly. I don't remember. Yes.
So, according to people said that's the only Rabbanan nowadays anyways.
Who said it's only Rabbanan nowadays? No one said
I thought I've heard that before.
We didn't say that. I can only take responsibility for what we said. Again, what I said at the beginning of this year was, if you don't have a four-corner garment on, it's true. There's no chiyuv d'oraisa to put it on. What you probably are using
like
is it.
Less than it's only
no, that's not true. That is for sure not true. No, Tcheles is not Makev. It's not Makev. Okay, yes, Austin, last question.
I don't really understand why the type of material is important. The Torah's reason was to remind us.
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. So the simple answer to the question is that the Gemara understands, based on the Psukim themselves, that by choosing the word Beged, there is a category in halacha called Beged. That's not just limited to tzitzis. That relates to the laws of Tumah and Tahara. There's other areas of halacha where we need to know what is counts as a Beged or not. So material is relevant to that question, and also size is relevant to that question. Again, one thing we're not getting into is how big do the tzitzis have to be. I don't mean the strength, I mean the garment. Okay, but that's also relevant to what counts as a Beged. That's a formal thing. Now, that is the answer to your question. Because the Gemara says, based on the fact that the Torah used the term al-kanfei big dehem, so we know it has to be a beged. We want to know what counts as a beged or not. Now in light of that, you can then reframe your question and say, well, we have a conflict, but potential tension between the formal requirements of the pasuk and maybe the philosophy or spirit of the pasuk. Right, because okay, maybe it's not a formal garment, but what happened to Reisav Oso and Uzachartem and Lososuru? And so that's a fair question. That's like a super duper meta question about like halachic process, Dorshin Tama Lakra, what's called Tama Hamitzvos. So when do you say if the reason does or doesn't apply, that does affect the halacha, when don't you? That's part of a big, big topic. But the general rule, and here's a good example of it, even though sometimes it leaves us feeling a little bit wanting. But here you see a general example, which is usually true, that usually, especially if you're talking about a pasuk and explicit Gemara, usually when it comes to paskening strict halacha, the formal wins out. That spirit of it, the ultimate motivation, is important, but it doesn't usually supplant the formal requirements, okay? So now let's move on. Again, so I want to finish and I want to get to the mesh, because that's, I think, very practical. But also the cotton, which is really what we're getting at, because many people, myself included, are wearing those. So let's see. And considering that there's no air in this room, so it's definitely easier to be wearing cotton. But it would be even easier to wearing mesh. The question is, are you allowed? Okay. So, how do we paskin? Big, big machlokas. In the Gemara. In the Rishonim. So if you remember, I pretty clearly mentioned, the machlokas Rishonim wasn't just, you know, big guns versus big gun, but it's, you know, West Coast versus East Coast. Right? Chachmei Sfarad, Chachmei Ashkenaz. When you have a machlokas like that, what's the most likely outcome on the pages of Shulchan Aruch? Machlokas versus of Shulchan Aruch versus Ramah. The Kachave. If you take a look on the Shulchan Aruch, this is in Siman Tes. So we're towards the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch. Siman Tes. Chapter 9. Sif Aleph. Paragraph 1. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, no surprise, like the Rambam. Actually, he quotes both opinions. Certainly seems like, I would say, the Rambam. However, the Ramah makes it clear. Also, the Tur, another Ashkenazic great that we've learned, we used to talk about the Tur a little bit in Elul, if I remember correctly. They paskin, like Rashi or Beinu Tam and others, that all materials are chayev mi de'oraisa. The Taz, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, he says that most of the later poskim follow this as well. So you have the Ramah, for those of us who are obviously Ashkenazi, that's very important. But it's not just Ashkenazi. The Taz points out that really most poskim say this. So if you stop right there, if we go with that, if you're a Maran, a Machaber person, and you think that when the Shulchan Aruch quoted those two opinions, he really meant that was the main one, you have to wear wool. If you're Ashkenazi, or you just follow the Taz, who says that most opinions across the spectrum hold that any material is d'oraisa, then you could say, hey, I can still feel good about myself. I'm fulfilling the d'oraisa. I don't have to be schmoiling in the wool. I can wear the cotton tzitzis. There's just one but. This is the last point before we get to the synthetic, but this is a very important but. Many, many poskim, including but not limited to the Mishnah Berurah, and in more recent times, Rav Moshe Feinstein, they are of the belief that even though, yes, it's true, technically speaking, especially for Ashkenazim, you could rely on the Ramah, says the cotton fulfills the mitzvah, nevertheless, they feel that a Baal Nefesh or Yari Shamayim, someone who really, really wants to be L'chachila 110% aspirational in his Judaism, should not, quote-unquote, rely on that and think that they can fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa with cotton. Rather, they should go out of their way to wear wool. And Rav Moshe Feinstein adds, he was no dummy, even if it's hot, and even if you're uncomfortable, says Rav Moshe, you really should try to wear the wool anyway. And he says, v'kach ani noheg. He wasn't Superman, he also got hot. But he says, even in the summer, he is makpid to wear wool. He really thinks that is, because you're really covering all your bases. Again, you don't wear wool, so then maybe there are poskim will hold you're not fulfilling the mitzvah on a daraisa level, so you're losing out that chance. And even though you never had any chiyuv to put on the tzitzis to begin with, as we know, nevertheless, we said from the beginning of the shir that there's all these gemaras about how important it is to wear tzitzis and it's all this reward and it protects us, so wouldn't we want to fulfill the mitzvah on a daraisa level? It wouldn't be a good feeling if I told you, no, you're okay, you're wearing tzitzis, but yeah, it's only derabanan. If we're going to do it anyway, we want to fulfill it on a daraisa level. So that's what all these poskim suggest. And and that's why you may know, maybe some of you are doing it, you certainly have had rebbeim, or rebbeim, many of the rebbeim here, you may have had rebbeim in high school, who daft to wear those woolen tzitzis. Again, the easiest way to identify them is sometimes you can even see through the shirt, you can see the racing stripes. So those are the woolen tzitzis. So why do people do that? The answer is, because even though the Ramah says you don't have to, and even though the Taz has most poskim agree with that, there is a notable opinion, again, the Mishnah Berurah and others, who say you really, really should go out of your way. But, just to make it complicated. Yes. Not only, or just to defend, quote-unquote, those of us who are not yet fully wearing the woolen, there are other great, more recent poskim who disagree with that. The Sefer Ma'aser Rav, Post Yud Zayin, the book that collects the practices of the Vilna Gaon. Right? Can't get that much more influential than him the last few hundred years. It says the Vilna Gaon wore cotton tzitzis. No racing stripe from Vilna. Yes. Not only that.
You wore one.
Not only that. I can go better, man. The Chazanish and the Stipler also went cotton based on that grub.
How big were the chazanish?
Yeah. Okay, so if you want, that's true. That's not the best proof for level of comfort, right?
16.
Okay, it's a fair enough. It's a fair enough point. So I just want to point out the bottom line is, again, I can't encourage you. I wouldn't encourage you to dafka wear wool because I myself don't. But if the spirit moves you, so to speak, if that resonates with you, there are a lot of posts who really do strongly encourage that. Nevertheless, if you are hesitant about it or if your minhag has always been cotton, definitely yesh al mi lismoch. I would say for anybody, but kol shekein for a Ashkenazi, that many other great gedolim felt, again, that it wasn't really strictly required. I want to just hold the question now because I don't know if our belief tag is here or not, and I want to make sure.
He's on.
Oh, so I can just keep on going forever?
Yeah.
Okay, I still don't want to go that long. So let me just finish the shiur, and then I'll take as many questions as you want, okay? So that's the wool versus cotton thing. Again, you now understand why some, and maybe you even want to consider it yourself, dafka wear the wool, but I think there's certainly a very strong basis to wear cotton. The question is, what about mesh? This actually became very personal in my family this summer because when my son came home from sleepaway camp, he sent him to the States for sleepaway camp, so he came back with mesh tzitzis. Not instead of the tzitzis he had, but he came back with like 5 tzitzis in the bag, and one of them was mesh. A side point, the mesh was actually blue. That's actually a discussion about wearing a garment that is a different color than the string. Right? It's not a coincidence that our tzitzis and our talesim are always white. That's actually quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Right? Unless you have tcheles, then maybe it's probably blue. But I don't want to get into the blue thing now at all. But it was mesh, and I told him, I don't know if you should be wearing mesh. But he said, but it's so much more comfortable, tzitzis are so hard, and it's so hot in the summer, and Beit Shemesh is hot, and blah, 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 blah. So I was thinking, it's not the only time that wasn't the first time I looked into the sugya, but I was actually thinking about it in a very relevant and in a practical way. So again, no one has to volunteer if you don't want to, but I imagine, if I'm guessing, there might be some people even in the room as we speak wearing mesh tzitzis. So this is a very practical question. So we have about 7 to 10 minutes left so that we finish more or less on time. And I want to, what am I saying? We go till 15, right? I'm always thinking of 6 o'clock. My bad. Okay. I can breathe. Okay, it's still hot, but I can breathe. Okay.
Mishnah Berurah only held what he held because he was sitting in the air conditioning.
Oh, yeah, you mean in Rodden, the Mishnah Berurah air conditioning? Yeah. Nice try, nice try.
So, it's also Russia, it's cold.
Okay, but that's fair enough. I didn't tell you you have to do it. I didn't tell you you have to do it. Although Moshe Feinstein was living in Manhattan and he had plenty of heat and he would go. Anyway, you understand the sugya, firm basis for both approaches. But what about synthetic? As I mentioned already, the Gemara does say that Lekulei Alma, according to all opinions, even those who generally say it doesn't have to be wool, but they hold the line and they say there's one exception, not leather. The question is, what is, again, don't ask me why anyone would want to wear leather, but why not leather? Why not leather? I know, there's definitely some guys who think that would be cool, but sorry, the Gemara says no. The question is, why not? And what does that have to do with synthetic? So listen carefully. You ready? There's two opinions. As far as I know, maybe there's more. There's two very practical and relevant opinions and explanations for what the issue is with leather. The Chaye Adam, the Aruch HaShulchan, both say that is simply a formal din. Like a drasha. It's not a drasha that's explicit in the Gemara, but they point out, based on a pasuk in the world of Tumah and Tahara and Sefer HaYikra, where the pasuk says, O Beged, O Or. Or meaning leather there. They point out, you see from that the Torah itself separates the word leather and the word Beged, a garment. What do you see from that? They say that clearly leather is not considered a garment. In fact, you could wear it as a garment, does not a garment make. In the Torah's perspective, they suggest it's a formal din. Now, if that's true, it has nothing to do with synthetic. The unique halacha in leather, now you know, one more thing to know, more Torah, wonderful, but not helpful, necessarily. However, there's another view, which is probably more widely quoted, that is the opinion of the Levush. Levush, I think we've spoken about in the past, was a contemporary of the Rama, both of them writing on the heels of the Shulchan Aruch. And the Levush, as well as the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the founding Rebbe of Chabad, who wrote a halachic sefer, which is important even if you're not Lubavitch, but the Lavush, and I think the Shulchan Aruch agrees with them, they give a different reason. And this is now where we're getting into the meat of it.
Where's the first reason from?
The Chayei Adam and the Aruch HaShulchan.
Where is that possible? Oh, I don't know.
Vayikra.
Vayikra, Perek, Yud Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Bet. The Lavush says as follows. You know why you can't have tzitzis on a leather garment? You know why that's totally excluded from the mitzvah? Because what does something have to be a beged? What's the essential characteristic of a beged? When I was in college, I took a philosophy class called phenomenology. So the only thing I remember from that class is that you're trying to understand, like, what is, what makes something its essence? Like, what is a table? As if you say it has legs, but don't other things have legs? It has a flat thing. Well, like, what is the essence of a thing, of the phenomenon? I think that's what phenomenology is about. Anyway, that's certainly some field of philosophy or some course I took. So, what makes a beged a beged? I don't mean in fashion sense. Okay, I don't know. You ask one designer this, like, you know, an American designer, an Italian, but in a halachic sense, obviously, what makes a beged a beged? Says the Lavush, very simple. The essential characteristic is it's woven. A material that is woven is what we in halacha can call a beged, a garment. It has to be woven. That is the essential definition. Leather, obviously, is not woven. Okay? That's Ad Kan, a Kafa Aleph, a Kafa Chutznikim. That, but even if we say Ad Kan, or Maidan is still going, that's an inside joke for those who are there. And, oh, if you missed Simchat Torah, I'm sorry. It was awesome. That's the Ad Kan, the leather. Now, what does this have to do with our synthetic tzitzis? So as far as I know, the first great posek to discuss this was Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Obviously, they didn't have synthetic material, rayon, polyester, these kind of things, until the 20th century. But they're not so recent. Earlier in the 20th century, they had them too. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was asked this question. Tio, pause, before he tells you what he says, who was Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank? So that's our second Gadol of the day. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was born in the late 1800s, 1870s, I think. And he lived until 1960. He didn't die that long ago.
Oh.
Most, if not all, of your parents were probably born before he died.
Wait, late
1800s. He died in 1960. He was born in Kovno, a famous Lithuanian city, but actually at a relatively young age, in 1892, he made Aliyah. He moved to pre-state Palestine, to Eretz Yisrael, before there was a Medina. After learning yeshiva for many years, he became a dayan. He became very involved in the Rabbanut. You know, the Rabbanut, which we have now, actually started pre-state. He became a state organ, as well as a state. But anyway, he rose to the ranks of the court system and the Rabbanut. And in fact, what he's most known as, the title that he's kind of known as, which was kind of the crown of his career, was he was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. A very prominent person. He was a younger protege, Talmud, fan of Rav Kook's, but he's a big, big halacha. He wasn't like the Kabbalist and the mystic like Rav Kook, but in halacha, he was part of that community in Yerushalayim, was very close and devoted. Big, big posek. He has two important books you should know about. At some point, if not this year or next year, then in the future, you may be interested in Svarim, which are halachically essay types about the holidays. One of the best books you can buy is a multi-set volume called the Mikra'i Kodesh, which are Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's beautiful, beautiful, brilliant analysis and essays on the various Yomim Tovim, Mikra'i Kodesh. But what's more relevant for us at the moment is he also was a big, big posek. He wrote Shuvos, a sponsa called the Har Tzvi. Now, before I get to tell you what he says about synthetic tzitzis, just to mention two very famous of his psakim. I don't pick them daf because they're leniencies, and they're both controversial, actually. But he had his shitas, and even when they're not always followed, his shitas, he was Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. He was one of the Gedolei Hador, no question about it. A genius, genius, genius. And he had a particular influence on the nascent early rabbin in Eretz Yisrael. And that has impact out of Yom Hazeh in Rabbanut Kashrut for two things. Rewind to Rabbi Mordechai Friedman's first year with you. Number one, the Rabbanut out of Yom Hazeh paskins that gelatin, even if it's based from bones of a non-kosher animal, is kosher. That was in America. It's unheard of, because great poskim in America didn't agree. But there were great poskim in Europe, and particularly in Eretz Yisrael, including Mr. Pesach Frank, who held its mutter. That's why you could get the Rabbanut for decades, maybe even still now, give hashkacha on gelatin based on Mr. Pesach Frank and others. That's one famous psak of his. Another one is that the Rabbanut officially only will give hashkacha on Chalav Yisrael. Right? The situation in America is more complicated. Maybe that's for another topic. I don't know. Not for now. But the Rabbanut only gives on Chalav Yisrael. But what if you have a product which has the ingredient of powdered milk? Is powdered milk still included in the same halacha that would require Chalav Yisrael or not? And Rav Pesach Frank was lenient on that as well. And therefore, if you have something, let's say hypothetically like a Entenmann's donut or something like that, which is dairy, right? But they didn't sit there stirring the milk into it, right? They're making thousands of donuts at a time or something like that. So they're using powdered milk. So the Rabbanut will allow, under their Ishur, the Rabban, or the Hashkacha, powdered Chalav Yisrael, not actual Chalav Stam, non-Jewish milk. But powdered, they will. So that's a second famous psak that he gave. Again, he gave many psakim, kulos, chumrus, like any great posse. So what does he say about synthetic tzitzis? Said Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, we can learn from what the Lavush said about leather and apply it to your cool synthetic tzitzis. What did the Lavush say? That why was leather a problem? Because it wasn't woven. So it says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and Hanani. If in some factory they figured out a way to make a mold, and I don't know, whatever exactly chemicals, whatever you put in to make rayon or polyester, they did that, and out came a four-cornered thing which was soft and pliable, you could put over your head and wear, that would be just like leather, it wasn't woven. But that's not usually what they do. Usually they're making very fine threads or strings, whatever you want to call it, of said synthetic material, and then they weave that! Instead of weaving something natural, weaving something synthetic. In light of that, said Rav Pesach Frank and Hanami. If it's made in one piece, not woven, it's a problem. But if it's woven, so again, it's not wool, it doesn't have the hidur of wool, but according to the Ramah, if we don't require wool, this should also be allowed. And the impression I get is, you make a bracha on it as well. No problem. That's the first, and I would say, you could say, most lenient opinion. And Rav Pesach Frank, big shoulders. But others disagreed strongly. The most vehement opponent of that is Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Igros Moshe, Ora Chaim, Chelik Beis, Simon Aleph, he makes the following point. He says, when he accepts the woven definition of the Lavush, but he thinks that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is misunderstanding or misapplying. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank basically says it's all about practical question. Is it woven or not? So you can weave synthetic material. What's the problem? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's not what it means. What it means is not whether practically it was woven or not, but rather, is weaving fundamentally necessary to its production? You cannot have a cotton garment if you don't weave it. The weaving is essential for the garment. You can't do without. Therefore, he says, only a material like cotton and the like, where weaving is fundamental, not just practically it was or wasn't woven, is it necessary, fundamental to the process? As Rav Moshe Feinstein, if weaving is a necessary, fundamental part of the process, okay, that's what cotton is. You could come up with another material where that would be true. I guess that'd be good too. But something like synthetic materials, where you could make it in one kind of unit and then just put it on, you don't have to have woven it. It doesn't matter. So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, since that's the case, the fact that they often or most likely do weave it, that's true practically, but it's not fundamentally necessary to its production. and therefore it loses its status of a beged. Remember, how did we start with the whole leather question? Right? It needs to be a beged. The Lavush says a beged means woven. So if he's myself, Frank says, practically, was it woven or not? Let's look on that level. Moshe Feinstein says, don't look on that bottom level of practically woven or not, but look a little bit higher, more fundamentally. Is it necessary to be woven or not? If it's not necessary fundamentally to be woven, then even in a case where Lamasa it was woven, etc., Moshe Feinstein, it's still excluded from tzitzis. Many, many other poskim nowadays follow that view. So you have mikatze el katze. I just want to finish the third opinion, then we'll take any questions. But the two main extreme opinions, on the one end you have Tzipesa Frank, who you get the sense that if the synthetic was woven, it's even good to make a bracha on. In the morning, you know, you can make your mitzvah census as you make every other day. Or you have Ramosha Feinstein on the other extreme saying, no good, yes harm, yes foul, no good. And there is one second, and then there is a middle view, I'll call it the middle view. And that is the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer just died a few years ago, great 20th century postdoc here from Yerushalayim. So he says as follows. He says, really, until now we've been saying, well, what is leather? What's the issue? And then synthetic is just going to be either the same or better. He says synthetic is worse than leather. Why is it worse than leather? First of all, I meant that leather is worse. Why is leather worse? First of all, the Torah itself seems to exclude it, right? Oh, beged, oh, or. It's clearly excluded by the Torah itself. But more than that, he says, it's not the weaving per se, but rather, it is something that is a naturally designed object. Leather is part of nature. It's an animal skin. Who made the leather? Hashem made it. We had to, like, you know, put some chemicals on the hides and stuff, but it's a natural product. We don't make leather. It is. We just kind of work with it. As opposed to, what's a beged? It's not weaving per se as much as it is something that a human being has to make. That's a subtle shift. But on the one hand, if you took it to its logical conclusion, what would you say? What is synthetic? Is that a natural thing or is it something that a man has to make? Well, that's obvious. Of course, that is a man-made material, right? Very, very man-made. And therefore, logically, says that Tzitz Eliezer, what would his conclusion be? Similar to the first opinion. That you could not only wear it, because it's man-made, not like leather at all, it's man-made. You could even make a bracha on it. The reason I call it the middle position, because he pulls back at the end. Despite all the nice theoretical argument, bottom line, he says, is you can wear it. It's not a problem of four corners, but no tzitzis. You can wear it, but he says not to make a bracha on it. So if I understand correctly, I think there are lemaisa three opinions. Some who say you could wear it with a bracha, some will say not to wear it at all, and you're accomplishing nothing. And some will say, wear it, but do not make a bracha on it. My sense, personally, is that most poskim, at least in America, which I'm more familiar with, but I think it's true even here, follower of Moshe are really, really not fans of the synthetic. But it's not my role to poskin for you. If this is something that you wear or you'd like to wear, then speak to whoever your Rebbe is, whether this person is here or back home. And get a psak. And if you have a Rebbe who tells you you could wear it, you can make a bracha on it. So now you understand where they're coming from. You call me Lismo. But my sense is that many do not. I was very upset at my son. I did not want him wearing it. But he's a teenager and he also dorms half the week, so I don't really always know what he's doing. He doesn't always listen to me. That's a chiddush, I know. Teenagers aren't supposed to always listen to their fathers. But anyway, what can you do? I'm learning to step back and let go a little bit. Not too much, though. Anyway. We met him over Shabbos, the oldest one. Anyway, that's the shear. That is the bottom line, and I'm happy to stay now for any questions. Shkoyach. Yes. I don't even want to start. Daniel, I think you're first.
So what would you have said about synthetic material that has to be woven? Like, can't make it large, like, sections. It has to be very fine.
It doesn't have to be. Listen, you can make a synthetic thing, which is soft and pliable and will flap in the wind, in a unit. You don't have to make teeny little things that weave together. Hypothetically, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure if there's such a thing that you can't make it otherwise. It has to be woven.
If the material was too wide, then it would.
How did it get that wide? Someone had to make it. Why couldn't they make it less wide? Again, I could be the hypothetically you're right. I'm just not, I can't think of something. Yes.
Following this, so would leather be 100% be fine for a four cornered leather garment without stitches?
As far as I know.
Following on from that, like a four cornered poncho, and then a four cornered, if you hold by someone's body, then four cornered synthetic material, and thus without.
The answer to that, all those questions is, I'll stick with the leather one. The answer, as far as I know, is yes.
But even like you go
for leather,
yes?
No, I didn't say that. I said okay. I'll stick with the leather.
Okay, just leather and the rest of the leather.
No, I'm saying synthetic is already in my focus. So okay, even though I was upset, I don't want my son doing it, but when I tell my son he can wear it, the four corners, but without tzitzis,
yeah.
I'd have to be really, really sure. That I can't say. Okay, I don't want to go that far. I'm going to pull back. Yeah, Jacob.
Two questions. If you identify yourself to wear wool,
yes, so that's also an excellent question, which is kind of a general klali halacha question. If there's something that's a little, you know, that's a real halacha, but different opinions, and you're going to be more strict. So if you're doing that already, you want to change your mind. Yes, that has the din of a neder.
Not necessarily changing your mind, like on a
unless
deal,
you did
like on a deal or something, you
want to
throw.
So I'm telling you, it's an excellent question. I'm not prepared to give you, especially on that example, a halacha lamaisa p'sak on that, but that is complicated. That you should sit with a posek and sit with somebody. That's a real excellent question. Because the halacha is that just like we say, if you take a neder, you didn't do bli neder, you made a neder, you have to keep it. Now, there's something about taras nedarim, but you're obligated until you do something about it. So we generally assume that a repetitive performance of a particular mitzvah can become a neder also. I'll give you an example. Let's say a person always stood for Chazar HaShatz, always stood for Kriyas HaTorah. They don't want to always. So then you'd have to probably do Hataras Nedarim. So yours is a little bit of a trickier one because you're saying, I don't want to stop wearing wool, I just don't want to wear it on Tiulim. Could be that would not require Hataras Nedarim. But if you told me, yeah, since I was, I don't know, 15 years old, I learned about this once, or my Rebbe, you know, a certain Rebbe of mine really influenced me to wear them, but now, you know, it's so hot, or I learned this sugya, and now I realize I don't want to, then I would say more likely than not, you'd have to go to Hataras Nedarim. Yeah, please.
Thank you, Martin. I have a pair of tie-dye shoes. So what's the date of that? We didn't really talk about
it. Yeah, so the color thing is a little bit of an issue. I'm not saying, there's an inyan, again, it's this whole sugya, I can't give you the whole sugya now, but it is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that's not nothing, that you should try to have the tzitzis and the garment be the same color. You should do that. So again, unless you're talking about tchelis, but we're obviously not.
Does it like if you're wearing a blue baguette or a red baguette or whatever, and you're wearing white tzitzis, does that?
Again, this is itself. It's called it's a whole sugya. I can't give you the whole sugya now, but it's not nothing. And in fact, there's a guy in my neighborhood. I don't know where you got your tie-dye stitches for, but in Israel, in the English speaking community in Israel, there's a famous guy who happens to live literally down the block from me. Unfortunately, he's actually originally from, I don't know, he's from Miami, but he has a brother in Miami Beach. Anyway, he was in a car accident a number of years ago. He lost both of his legs. He's in a wheelchair. And he has a lot of different things he likes to do that are nice. One of which is, I don't know how much it costs, but he, at his own expense, makes hundreds of tie-dye tzitzis, and he goes to various places where teenagers hang out, and he gives them out. He gave them to my kids, but I don't want them wearing them. I didn't tell them that. But it's not so simple. I'm not, again, we could give... The next 10 weeks, I could give tzitzis shiurim, and we wouldn't cover everything. But it's a good question, and if that's something you really want to do, you should take it up with somebody. Yeah.
Just sort of carrying in that area in terms of stuff being the baguette being the same color. I've seen more than a few people who wear gray and purple colors.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting fashion choice. Anyone in the room? Anyone's father in the room?
Like those rainbow stripe ones, awesome.
Okay, so then I'm not going to make fun of it. Almost got there! See how sensitive I am? See how refined I've been on the fingers? Anyway, so leave aside the background being gray, because that does relate to this question, so I'm going to punt because it's the same thing. But in terms of the stripes, so that's its own issue. The stripes, I don't know where the red or any other color comes from, but the idea of the stripes is supposed to be a zecher for tcheles, commemoration tcheles. That's actually... Most people don't know this, a machlokes, Rashi Rambam, whether tcheles is supposed to be like the sky during the day or the sky at night. Is it light blue or is it darkish blue, almost black? So I don't exactly know the history of the minog for the black stripes, but it's basically based on the opinion that that would be tcheles. White stripes is something completely, is like a Kabbalistic thing, or just nothing. I think it's nice. But the real issue, where the idea of stripes came from, is a zecher for tcheles. Well, tcheles wasn't white. It's usually so. If you tell me I have a black stripe tixis, I know where that comes from. If you tell me I have a blue stripes, I also know where that comes from. Any purple, maybe you could say if someone thinks that that's a kind of a tailus, maybe, I don't know. But anybody else, I'm not criticizing it. I'm saying I don't know. Interesting question. I heard someone ask, and I don't know the answer to this either. But you're in one of the best yeshivas in the world for this particular question. You're in one of the best yeshivas in the world, period. But you're one of the best yeshivas in the world for this particular question, which is if you wear black striped garment with the modern tcheles, which is clearly like blue, is that a little bit of a contradiction? Like, what's the pshat in that? I don't know. So if you see any of the rebbeim who wear tcheles in yeshiva, and there are certainly more than a few, wearing a black stripe on their tzitzis or their talis, but the blue tcheles, ask them, like, what's the pshat with that? Not in my name, unless they think it's a brilliant question, they should definitely quote me. Okay, yes.
Isn't there like also like in the people with a black spec like they thought like that
I never heard that before.
That's what Wikipedia
said. Did they give a source?
I'm not sure.
I did not Wikipedia.
Okay, if you find a source for that,
I didn't say that.
If you find a source, I would be curious, because I don't know that. And if there's a real source, then I'll put it in my files, because I did not know that.
The New Testament. Secondly, if you were to wear meshes, you didn't want the whole, like, did you wear, like, a talit?
Again, the whole issue of talit gadol versus tzitzis katan or talis katan is, I'm repeating myself the 18th time, another bigger topic. But, again, it's let me put this, I'll take a step back. You wear talis, everyone?
Yeah.
Of course. Just checking, you know, there's always the renegade stardom. Is a major shiloh, which I don't have an answer for. Like, I don't mean like I have one later. I mean, I don't have one. Why, other than German Jews, for the most part, Ashkenazim pre-wedding do not wear talis? We don't have a good reason. We don't have anything nearly that good. We don't have a good reason. There's no real good reason. It's a major mystery.
What's the German Jews?
German boys, even before they're married, wear talis. But every other mitzvah, your mommy and your daddy, when you were 3 years old, said, "Put on your little tzitzis," and you're a little older, and they, you know, and then right, we do. That's called chit, right? So when you're 13, you're a bar mitzvah boy. Why wouldn't you put on a talis? What's the difference between talis and tzitzis? That's a bigger topic for sure. That
like when you get married,
it's not the real thing. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, look in the Mishnah Berurah, you're supposed to do it. Where did it come from?
Sephardi.
I mean, I don't do it either. My kids don't do it either. I didn't do it until I was married, I'm saying. This idea that it's not at all so. Okay, one or two questions, I gotta go. Yo, bro.
According to the Tzadiyah,
why are people allowed to eat? The leaf or the whatever the word is, the vegetable, I don't know what the technical term is. Plant. That is the word I was going to say. Yes, the plant. But the plant is not what you doesn't look remotely resemble. There is a lot of.
I think yes.
If the weed.
The Gemara assumes this is that already goes back to the Gemara. The Gemara seems to assume that that's a fundamental difference. Okay. Yeah, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say cotton. I mean, later posts can give that as a modern example, but the Bachlokes in the Gemara is wool and linen or everything else, okay? and but not leather. Okay, yeah, sure.
What is the mitzvah to wear, basically, when you have to wear tzitzit, and is it like you have like, the mitzvah is only just to put it on in the morning, and you can take it off, or you should wear it day and night?
So if you're talking about the thing you're wearing under your shirt, and if you're talking about the fact that, again, nowadays, our clothing is not four-cornered, so we are, quote-unquote, volunteering or minhug obligated to put this on because of all the reward and everything that's promised, and as I said before, it's kind of a statement about who you are, what you want to be, blah, 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 blah. So then that is not limited to 10 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes at night. For sure not. Now, again, a topic which I've alluded to already, I think, once when I was asked my controversial question, which I didn't answer and I won't answer. So don't try that, okay? Don't try that. About women, which is there is an issue of it being night versus day. So there is a discussion, which I'm not getting into now either, though, but there's a discussion. If you're wearing your tzitzis all day, again, I would not pull I don't take them off just because, ooh, it's dark out. Take off the tzitzis, yes! I think that would be the wrong attitude. But, for example, let's say you took them off, you showered or something like that, or you took them off, you really were mafs, hesek adas. Should you put them back on at night? That's not so simple. That's already a different kind of question. But so there is this day versus night thing, but fundamentally, what we're quote-unquote volunteering to do, we do...
Oh, is it possible you shouldn't put them back on?
Yeah, there are such people who say such a thing. Yes, this is all part of the many topics which we're not getting to. Yes.
Why do some people say that? Well, when women work as a garment, and some people say it doesn't, like wear the yellow.
wool or linen, everyone agrees. That's in the pasuk. The first opinion says it has to be wool or linen.
Yeah, sorry, wool or linen.
The Gemara has a drasha. I didn't give you the whole drasha, but it's in the Gemara. The Gemara has that is a hekesh between tzitzis and shatnez. It's very ironic or paradoxical drasha. But the same thing that cannot be combined in any other context, A, if your talis were in wool and your garment was in linen, the Gemara says that works, I say dochalo say. But also, according to this first opinion of the Gemara, the comparison to shatnez, among other things, teaches us that the same two materials that you can't weave together to make shatnez, it's separately, though, those two materials that can be the garment for tzitzis. And the other opinion is not impressed with that drasha. They don't follow it. But it's a question of a drasha or not, yes.
Is it an issue if the talis or tzitzis start to become really yellow?
No. I mean, other than hygiene and...
Okay, but...
No.
But like, you see, like, somebody was married 30 years ago, it's the same one.
Right, so I'm married, Kanai Nahara, just in case you were looking for a good present to get me to show me your love and appreciation. You missed my birthday over Sukkot, but let your heart not be worried. Because coming up in November 19th is my 20th wedding anniversary. Could you believe it? I look so young. I act so young. 20 years. So I got two talisim from my father-in-law for, like many people do, the minhag gifts for the wedding. One for the week, one for Shabbos. And until a few months ago, I was wearing the same two talisim. I bought one new one, which I, for now, wear on Shabbos. But my weekday talis is still the same one. But I really desperately need a new one. Just ask my kids or my father. They're both, like, mortified. Huh?
I'm going to use your old Shabbos one too.
It was also gross. So I just maybe I did actually. I take that back. But the point is, the one I'm wearing every day during the week is also 20 years old. I can't.
Does it
I think.
If it
that's the kind of thing that's going to slap you in the face if you try to make a mistake.
Yeah. That does not matter. Not halachically. Again, it's not pekavadik. It's not nice.
Why is that different?
It's not dyed yellow. It's just sweat or air. It's not dyed. It's not dyed. Yes.
They had armor back then, right?
I mean, if it lived in like England or Ireland or Scotland.
They knew what armor was. Why would
in the Mishnah, Shabbos talks about.
Wouldn't they assume, so if metal armor is punished from 6 feet, they would have...
We didn't discuss metal.
What?
We didn't discuss metal.
Right, but the point is that the all ideas of leather, for example, if you say the idea of woven, metal also isn't woven.
Who said it's obligated in synthesis?
Chain metal is woven.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if there's a discussion about that, honestly.
But the point is that they say everything except leather. If
yes.
Woven, they also said that also not a metal, like a metal.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Okay, one more, yes. Two more.
I think you might have.
Don't do that ever again.
I think you might be. I could be wrong about this, but every second you said,
yes, yes.
Every minute.
No, every second. Yes, okay, here we go.
Because
you asked so nicely and articulately.
If it was found out a way in the future that we could make a cotton garment without the use of weaving, could that cause an issue?
According to the Lavush and others, maybe.
If that was bad.
Again, it depends on how you understand this. If you say that it's a question of practically, was it woven or not, maybe it would vary. Some yes, some no, whether Lamaisa was woven or not. Ironically, according to Moshe Feinstein, he might think that it's fundamentally okay, because fundamentally, you know, cotton or whatever is woven. But you figure that away in science fiction to do it not weaving. But he again, when it came to the synthetic and the leather, right? Or Moshe said it wasn't practically whether it's woven or not, but whether fundamentally is it necessary? So if usually it is, but maybe in some cases you didn't. I don't know. But it's an interesting question. I hope we should all live long enough to see such an invention. Mm-hmm. All right, gentlemen, have a great, great day. Okay, here's the thing. Let's stop.